That's Monty Alexander with Bob Marley's Jammin'. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Tuesday, October the 15th, that is to say, 15 days into the partial federal government shutdown, and 2 days before the deadline for a bipartisan agreement on covering almost $17 trillion in national debt. And, of course, being Tuesday, it is open forum, your chance to take the discussion wherever you want it to go. But I imagine on your mind is a state of affairs currently in Washington, D.C. I am starting late. Gary ran into my hour, in effect, to help the station I previously was affiliated with some time ago to keep it going. I wish at some point there would be a frank discussion as to why that station is in the situation that it is and why the fundamental issues still are being ignored. It would be very helpful to lay that out. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. Let's see what's on your mind today. Sarah. Hello, how are you?
Hello, Eutrice.
Oh, you don't sound like Sarah.
Oh, this is Harvey from Berkeley.
Well, hello, Harvey. How are you?
Very good. And America always seems to be at war. It's a conditioning, a lifestyle that that Americans seem to be used to. We have the war on drugs, the war on crime, the war on poverty, the battle of the sexes, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. They wanted to go to war, but they couldn't. So I think that they turned around and made war on the people of America. But they turned on us, and if the Tea Party succeeds in at closing down the government, they'll undermine the dollar, reducing the value of our savings.
Wait a minute. Wait, Harvey, you're going 500 miles an hour here. Who are the they that you're talking about?
Well, the Tea Party.
Only the Tea Party?
Well, the Republican Party, and the Tea Party is part of it, but
and only the Republican in the Tea Party?
Well, no, there's on both sides, you know. But mostly it's a Tea Party. They're holding America hostage. And I feel that that it'll undermine the dollar, reduce the value of savings.
But wait a minute. Yes. I understand you're going 500 miles again.
Okay.
I have to challenge you on your facts.
Sure.
You are saying that the Tea Party, basically you're saying that the Tea Party and the Tea Party mostly, or the Tea Party only, is basically doing a stick-up, a political stick-up. Aren't you falling for the line that is being spun by major media?
Which is?
That the Tea Party is a party responsible for the mess we're in.
Well, you know, there's all this underlying things happening, too. At the same time, as I see it, a lot of the big or major problems in America have been swept under the rug. It seems to suit both parties. You don't hear about the XL pipeline anymore. You don't hear about Fukushima. You don't hear about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You don't hear about global warming. You don't hear about fracking. All that they seems to have taken over the media, and they're doing a great job because they're scaring the hell out of everybody. So everybody just focused on this. And
the reason I brought that to your attention was,
yes.
You know, in this forum, we want to be able to share authoritative information and to share our opinions, which may or may not be scientific.
Right.
But I didn't hear you say, I think the Tea Party so and so and so. But when you stated the fact as a standalone fact, of course, I have to ask you. So if had you said, in my view, the Tea Party is responsible, I would have left you alone. But you didn't say that. You stated it as if it were, as if you had scientific basis for making the Tea Party singularly responsible.
Well, it's a group effort, and as a matter of fact, I feel that we need to change our system to more of a parliamentary system where the people have a voice, because it seems that the two parties now are beholden to the corporations more than to the people. And so I feel that this is a good reason to change the system to a more equitable system, which represents the people as well as the corporations.
And, thank you. You did a good retrieve there.
Thank you.
You got back on track. You see, what I was trying to suggest to you is, your opinion is fine, as long as we know that it's your opinion. It doesn't. I mean, we would like it to be rooted in some kind of statistical or scientific fact, but it's okay if it's just an opinion, except that you needed to make it clear mm-hmm. that it was your thinking that this is the case, as opposed
yes.
to stating it as if it were scientifically established to be the case.
Yes. Well, you know, I completely agree with you. And
thanks a lot. We have to move on because
we're
starting late today.
Thank you.
But you did get your ceremonial first start.
Thank you.
Thank you, Harvey. Thanks so
Thank
much.
You.
Hello, Sarah. You're on the air.
Greetings, Utrecht, and greetings to the listeners.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, Utrecht, I enjoyed your program on yesterday. It was very nice to hear the late ancestor, Dr. Van Sertma, assert what we all know to be the fallacy of this Columbus holiday that we like to go out and spend some money on, and while we insult the ancestors. But I'm digressing from your open topic, and I'm glad that you made those blocks to correct Harvey in his assertion about the Tea Party and the Republicans. We have allowed ourselves to be pulled into this false premise that is only the bad guys, the Republicans, and it's the Tea Party. It's all political parties. We need to look at all political parties, even the so-called progressive as Bernie Sanders and all of these who like to sit out on the fringe and call themselves social Democrats and all these other fancy names they come up with. They have all bought in lock, stock, and barrel into this old paradigm that's going on in D.C. They're all a part of the cabal.
No question.
So we need to stop. We need to sit back, and we need to hold all of our elected officials responsible, because whatever stripes they want to wear, whatever suit they want to put on with it, whether it be they want to ride in on an elephant or ride in on a donkey, they all are in this together. They have all decided as a group to get paid, while the majority of people out here, especially the military, and I can speak as a veteran of the military and many of my friends who are still on active duty, whose paycheck is hanging in a balance, because in a few days' time, if they don't get this matter resolved, they're going to be up the creek. We're going to have lots of family Because as we saw over the weekend, Utrecht, they did this little test run where they did with this the SNAP program where they shut the system down for those 72 hours. Mm-hmm. I believe it was done strategically on purpose just to see what type of reaction, because this program is ran by IBM, and it's linked through Chase Bank, because Chase Bank is the one who funds the SNAP program where this money comes off, and IBM runs the program. That
Actually, I thought it was Xerox.
No, it's IBM.
Oh, I thought I read Xerox, but go ahead.
Yeah. But you see, Utrecht, from what I've heard from gathering from around the country, it's only in certain areas, the urban centers, put that in quotes, where these people were locked out and they could not get food. Here it is, you have money, but you can't get food because the system shut down for 72 hours. But some people say if they go out in certain white communities without line in the area, they were able to use their SNAP cards and able to purchase food. So, once again, they're doing these test runs in the community just to see your reaction. So far, we've been sitting on our hands. We have not mounted up any protests. We have not done anything for what this government has been doing, treating us like cattle. We have all – I have to go with Steve, the late ancestor Steve Coakley, and say, you know, it must be the fluoride in the water and something else that they're feeding us that have us so passive that we don't want to protest. We are so scared that some police is going to come and lock us up or do something to us that we don't want to protest. We are just leading ourselves, being led into the slaughterhouse, and we don't care.
But you have to understand something, and what is working in the favor of these terrorists, these political terrorists, is the tried and true idea that people will be, especially African Americans, Latinos, would be very reluctant to attack a black president. They wouldn't want to do that because it's supposed to be very psychologically demeaning to do something like that. So they've calculated correctly that there would be a huge problem to overcome psychologically in protesting or even being publicly negative or critical of the Obama administration. But I was hoping that, Sarah, thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
888-874-4888. I was hoping, I made an observation last week when I was asking, is anybody finding what the real problem here is as the Democrats and the Republicans fight it out over seemingly issues of the national debt and so forth. The bottom line here is that the administration simply had not and deliberately decided not to put together a budget for 5 years. It hasn't done it. And the Republicans have seen it to be to their political advantage to let it go. So they're all culpable for not having or not insisting that the nation have a budget. And I'll tell you why that is. It isn't that a budget is just a bunch of numbers on a piece of paper. I mean, a budget is so huge. A budget is actually the public confirmation, the public statement by the president as to his priorities, as to his commitments, as to his vision. Barack Obama excelled at one thing, and that thing is to say something and do something completely different. So while he is committed to these constituencies, there's nothing right now in terms of a budget that says where exactly his commitments are. You see? So this is the game that they've been playing. It's finally come to a head, and both sides are fighting, because the Republicans can't admit that for 5 years they themselves have not had the wherewithal, the moral fortitude to put forward a budget. They didn't want to be blamed. They didn't want to show their cards for 5 years. So they allowed Obama to get away with it. And Obama, in the last 5 years, and including this year, how he has been managing is on a case-by-case basis. The first term of Obama, when he first came into office, There was no budget because the plan for the first term was to reward all the people who were very heavily invested in his successful campaign. You don't want to commit that to paper. And now we see that the continuation of the plan, we see that the president really has priorities that he dare not make concrete in a budget. He can't do it, and he won't do it because he knows that his cards eventually will be seen. And we will all be able to tell by any budget put forward by this president exactly what he intends to do. Barack Obama, for example, did not commit the Affordable Care Act to a budget because we would know exactly what he wanted to do. He did not commit the farm bill and the food stamp program to a budget item because we will know what he intended to do. This so-called Democratic president is picking up the Clinton method of operating. Cut, cut, cut. And I guarantee you, I did say this several times before, this president's main job is to finish off the ideological underpinning that Bill Clinton had begun, which is to attack the people least able to defend themselves. Now more than ever, we're seeing these criticisms about the Obamacare and how ridiculously expensive it's going to be and how it is impossible to tell or to even tame the rate of inflation over the cost of premiums and whether people, once they are compelled to buy insurance by law, whether they'll be able to use it. There's a whole other thing. I said all of that. But the key thing here that everybody's missing, the fight now is the fight that should have begun 5 years ago when the president coming in all nice and, you know, fresh and bushy-tailed and wide-eyed and ready to go, as he used to say, ready to go. Let's see your budget. Let's see your budget. And that should have been an immediate demand. Construct a budget, because that will now compel you to fulfill commitments to your constituencies. That will compel you to make your intentions known. That will compel you to say exactly where you want to go, exactly what the vision is, and exactly who you place as your top priority items. He didn't do it because he didn't want to do it, and he felt he could get away with it. The Republicans said, for the same reason, they didn't want to go up against this popularly elected man. They didn't want to be seen as racist, although they are. I mean, the party has been acting in a very racist way, I must tell you. As you can see, even now, as the negotiations are continuing, you don't see that much melanin in the crowd, do you? Of who is negotiating and who's got something to say. You know, all these fallacies are right there. But the reason with this whole thing is going on, and they're now quarreling about a $17 trillion debt, well, that's what happens when you don't have a budget. When you are politically responding to economic issues, and you are doing so in behalf of that hidden hand that had controlled you all along. And that's why, you know, when I was a union shop steward, and the first thing you say, and people need to understand that, a contract is great. A contract compels both sides to understand what the objectives are. And you, both sides are protected in a way by articulating a contract. Even as a manager, I brought in a union. And I said, this is going to be the union, and this is going to be the contract. Everybody agrees? Fine, let's go. We know what the rules are, both sides. I did that as a manager. That's how important it is. But this president has insisted on not having anything directly traceable, anything that could easily tell for sure, in black and white, exactly what he views as his priority items, as to his vision, as to commitments to the disparate constituencies that brought him to victory the first time and that brought him to victory again. And this is where we are. So let's see how they work this out. Hello, DX. You're on the air.
Hello, you, Therese. How are you doing today?
I'm good. You know, as I say, one foot in front of the other.
Okay, good. What I see here, well, first of all, you're absolutely right. A budget, as I've heard before, is a moral document. And let's it be known what your priorities are, what your what's important to you, what's not, who's important to you and who's not, what groups of people. And you're absolutely right. He won't do it because he knows that it'll be transparent and then we'll have to own up to some stuff. But I read yesterday, now this confuses me, that he still has a great amount of support in the black community, especially among black females. I think it's somewhere around 93%. And I'm kind of confused by that. I don't understand why, because I think black males have fallen off a little and it's come down quite a bit, but black females are still in support of this guy. And I don't understand that. They're the ones that are being hurt the most by what's going on.
Black females, I could see why they would do that. Number one, from the point of view of the poll takers, reflect the conditioning, the social conditioning, and the social conditioning of this society is to pit men against women. So they want to know, how, in the same way that in the white world, for example, there's a war. You know, white women have their issues with white men. That kind of thinking, and I've addressed this before, is fatal in our community, because to separate black women from the black community is to engage in that same kind of divide and conquer thing. What ought to happen, and too many black women are falling for this approach. Mm-hmm. The thing is that as go the black community, goes everybody, black men, black women, and children. So they're trying to, in other words, ferret out that part of the black community that they think that they can apply the same social construct to, and I believe that is a reflection of the social conditioning in our society between white women and white men. They apply that same model or that construct, which is false, for other communities as well. Secondly, there is an indirect reason, and it has to do with not so much Barack Obama. Support for Barack Obama having to do with how they believe black women see Michelle Obama as being regarded by Barack Obama, if this makes sense to you. Because Michelle Obama is seen as a very cherished woman by a man who is faithful and loyal and all the things that black women complain about their men, the man attached to Michelle Obama that affords her this, not just a lifestyle, but this level of comfort in their personal relationship, such a man would be really wonderfully supported. And that's mm-hmm. that's the rationale for that. So Barack Obama gets a lot of kudos because indirectly, most black women are longing to be loved the same way Barack right. Obama loves Michelle. You understand how goes?
Do you think that some of it may be, though, that he is a charming, nice-looking man?
Yeah, and, well, that's the whole thing. That's the whole
thinking
thing.
Here's other parts of their body rather than their mind. I think that might be some of it as well. You know, I mean, I've always...
But it's a psychological thing. When women see Michelle Obama, almost all women, but especially African-American women, see Michelle Obama and Barack Obama together, there is a yearning, an indirect and a silent, unexpressed yearning for the same thing in their lives. So, I mean, the pollsters have read this very, very carefully, and that's why now they're moving to separate black women from the black men. In other words, to maintain the same social construct as exists in the white world. It is fatal for the black community to allow it, but this is what's going on. Thanks, DX. Good to hear from you and to talk to you. Anthony from New Jersey, from Jersey. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, New Jersey?
Good, good.
I just want to say, like, people understand, like, this the debt ceiling, all this other stuff, like, we have to have the debt increase every year. I'm not saying it's right. That's the system we have. We have a debt-based system. Like, if we don't accrue more debt the next year, our system is failing. Like, people understand that where if we paid all the debts off now, there'd be no money left. We don't even have the money to pay back the interest that is there if we pay back all the debt, all the debts. So it's like our system doesn't work as a whole. Once people understand that our system is just ran on debt and death, then they'll understand that. You know what I mean? All we are is war people, and we just send out debt. Anybody who makes money is the only people that what? You sell houses, you just gave somebody debt. You sell cars, you just gave somebody debt. You know what I mean? You go to school, colleges, you just got into debt. Like the only people that make money are people that hand out debt. So we're in a debt-based society. Once we fix that, everything else is fine. And then people talk about all this money being spent. We spend more money than the whole world on our military and stuff like that, too. So if you take that away, we have money for budgets and monies for stuff, but no one looks at that. And they'll just sit there and let their pensions get raided and this happened and that happened and put their tails between their legs, and they won't do nothing about it.
Well, but you're right. However, the fact that the nation has debt is nothing new. Nations have debt. That's the way it works. There are many, many unanticipated costs. The problem is, in the absence of a budget, we don't even know what kind of debt and why the debt is being incurred. We don't know what kind of debt the nation has decided to incur, and we don't know why. The debt could be good debt. It could be bad debt. You know, just like you and I in our personal lives, if you and I should get ill or something catastrophic should happen and we have to go into debt to solve the problem, well, okay, we could rationalize that as a good debt. But if we're going to buy, you know, a Murcielago for a couple of $100,000 when we make $10,000 a year, well, that's pretty much bad debt. We could agree with that. The problem is, The nation's leaders have not made it clear to the public, to the American public, via a bona fide budget, an honest, transparent budget, just in terms of where is this nation incurring debt? Where is the money coming from to cover the debt? You see, this is the real nasty part of the Obama administration. It has refused to be transparent about it. And the first thing I said when he was elected, and the first slip-up was that they let the first year pass without a budget. I said, well, they're letting this man off the hook. You elect a guy. He has given you lip service about all the things he's going to do. The first place you look for fidelity in that contract is in a budget. Or you say you love me? Great. Where are you taking care of me? Let me see where I fall in your budget. But he hasn't produced a budget. And the first year went into the second and the third and the fourth, so he escaped the entire first term without a budget. On the strength, and this is the insidiousness of it, they're selling the idea, well, we didn't get a budget passed because the Republicans blocked it. Well, that's their job. But when you have the man who is your Treasury Secretary now, you know, who is the person who you are looking to regulate your currency domestically. You have that much faith in him because he was Clinton's guy in the Office of Management and Budget. You put him there as your director of the Office of Management and Budget. He was your White House Chief of Staff. And he was a guy you trusted with the whole idea of putting together a budget. And for 5 years, you don't have a budget. This is not accidental. It means you don't intend to put together a budget. because you don't intend to show your hand. So that people keep hoping and praying. You can always tell people stuff like, the road is hard, we have so much to do, I need your support to go this one thing further, and you selecting arbitrarily, I need your help with Obamacare. And people, and Nancy Pelosi telling county officials, you got to vote for it first before I tell you what's in it. How do you do business like this? The budget is what has come to haunt Barack Obama, and this is his own doing. You can't blame the Republicans. They've never really been very, very, I should say, liberal. But that's okay. The fact is we've never had a public debate about the budget because we never had a budget. And it is incomprehensible and, in fact, unforgivable, especially from those constituencies that voted heavily for Barack Obama, and top of the list is the African-American community, that their leaders and the communities themselves have not insisted, let's see where you put us in the budget. Let's see what you're hoping to do with these so-called entitlement programs, which they incorrectly call entitlement programs. Let's see what you're planning to do. But then we see, for example, that out of the blue, $40 billion, the Republicans in the House were successful at chopping that much off of a food assurance program. What kind of stuff is that? Well, of course, if you don't have a budget, you don't have a reference point as to what matters and where in the scheme of things you can locate the issues that are extremely important to these constituencies, nor can you hold the president responsible for falling down on the job with respect to your interests. So they let him go. The Congressional Black Caucus let him go. The Progressive Caucus let him go. The Asian Caucus let him go. You know, everybody let him go. And here we are. We now have $17 trillion. Well, how did that happen? Where did the money go? And more importantly, now that we understand that there's $17 trillion already has been spent, and where it went, we don't know, and he does not intend to let us know. The thing is, the only place that it will come from, logic, folks, just use your logic. The only place that it could come from, and this is the essence of the negotiation now, this is where the Republicans have them, is you're going to have to put together a kind of one from column A, one from column B menu, which is you will have to raise taxes somewhere. You will have to cut programs. This is the number one priority. Cut spending. That's what the Republicans are saying. Cut the spending. But where are you going to cut? You don't cut spending from those constituencies that are politically powerful and that could defend themselves. You cut where people are politically defenseless, and even if they raised their voices, it wouldn't matter because they are not seen as critical in terms of the political and economic direction of this nation. We all know who those folks are. The ones he turns to all the time to do all the heavy lifting, you're going to be first on the chopping block. I said this a long time ago. And it has nothing to do with your ideology, whether you're conservative or liberal. You know, I don't care for these kinds of labels. The bottom line is you judge a person, especially politicians, not by what they say, but what they do. Inevitably, the question comes, and this is where both Republicans and Democrats, and even the independents, all three of them in Congress, you say, well, wait a minute. How come it hasn't occurred to you that a major failing for 5 years straight has been that there has been no budget by this president that was put forward by this president? He has escaped detection in terms of whether he's honoring pledges to the particular constituencies to whom he owes serious favors. And you see, the budget will also explain who he's loyal to. The budget will give us an idea of who really controls him. We know with Obamacare, we know that that sector of the economy, one-sixth of the economy in terms of the revenues it produces, that sector is totally responsible for Obamacare. And he has made it clear. He is not even negotiating. He is willing to put the country on the line, so convinced, so loyal is he to that group. The country could go down the tubes as long as nobody interferes with Obamacare, flawed as it is, wrong as it is, wrong-headed as it is. I mean, this is stunning. And the law, as we know, was passed in the dead of night. 2,700 pages. The legislators were given less than 5 minutes to review the bill and then vote on it quickly and then go home for the Christmas holidays. And boom, he announces it's the law. Come on. This society ought to grow up. This nation ought to grow up. And the Democrats should be putting Mr. Obama in a soundproof room and cussing him out because he has brought the nation to this point, and they can't excuse it. I don't care how many press releases they issue and blame the Republicans, those horrible, horrible Republicans. This is Obama. He is at the epicenter of the problem, and they, by extension, also are at the epicenter of the problem because they have failed in their jobs to make sure that things go the right way. See, this is the truth of it. They can't explain to people how come you're there for the Congressional Black Caucus, you let this man ignore you for 790 days, and you supposedly are empowered? Get out of here. You've got to be joking. You've got to be kidding. 888-874-4888. I just want to make one fast announcement, and that is some of you had difficulty accessing the program yesterday, which was stunning, I must say. I liked it a lot. And so did many people who listened live, but some people wanting to go to the archives had a little bit of trouble. The technical department has fully uploaded everything, so it's fine now, and you should have absolutely no problem. They apprised me of that today. Everything is fine. Previously, it was only uploading a very small part, but the entire program is fully accessible to you today. 888-874-4888. You know, we have to grow up here and see that the issue is, again, the drama between these ideological polar opposites, supposedly, and we know they're not really that much opposite. The idea that we should have now is seeking alternatives and building on alternatives to the system. The two-party system proves, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that this is not a good system. It doesn't work. And there is very little recourse for the people other than, you know, turning out in the streets and pressing vocally for some kind of change. And interminable polls that are showing the same thing over and over and over again, the people are displeased. They've been saying that for months. Does that do anything? Does it cause a change? No, it doesn't. So the idea is to build on alternatives. Sheryl from New York, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, Teresa.
Good afternoon to you.
I need some clarification from you. Are you stating that Barack Obama has never offered a budget, or that he did not offer one this year?
He did not. We have not had a budget from the Obama administration for 5 years.
Well, no, that's not true. They offered a budget. They offered a budget last year.
And, No.
They offered a budget last year. The Republicans then took his budget, took the numbers out of the budget, took a a budget that consisted of several thousand pages and to put it into like 10 pages and then decided to vote, and they put it out for vote, and it was voted down 99-0. Okay, so he has submitted budgets. So it's not true that he's never submitted a budget. What he hasn't done is submitted a budget which is past Congress and which he has signed. That's a different issue.
What they've been arguing over is a budget resolution. Not a budget, but a budget resolution. The idea is we're looking, even if, let's say, even if he said he put together a budget and submitted it last year. Okay, last year would make it how many years into his administration?
My point was not to say that. And my point was to say that you were incorrect to say that he didn't issue a budget, ever issue a budget. That was my point. It wasn't that whether he did one last year or whether he did one in 2011 or 2009. That wasn't my point. My point was that he issued one last year, as early ago as far in the past as last year, and that was my point. And part of the issue is that I was not an Obama fan, and I was not caught up in the hysteria. I didn't go out and cry in November of 2008. And I wasn't involved in anything because my thing was, I don't know who this guy is. I had a problem with the way he got elected to the Senate from Chicago based on all the things that happened with the candidate who probably should have won and would have won. And when things, documents released from his divorce and all kinds of other things happened, you know, and then you get some clown like Alan Keyes, who's not even from the state, and use him as a candidate to run against him. So it's like, here, it's a softball, you know, hit this one, you know. So that whole thing was a problem. But I think my thing now with defense, as well as I think a large portion of the black community's defense, because it is very difficult for people who consider themselves to be progressive to sign on board with people whose aims, their only aim is to destroy a man. The speaker of them told us that his only job was, his number one job was not to provide laws for his constituencies to make sure the government runs. He said that his only job was to make sure this man was a one-time president.
Okay, sure. Okay, but well, let me ask you this.
We've got these born-again Democrats who are now Republicans, these same people who thwarted all attempts of black folk in the 1930s, 40s, 50s from trying to get redress from the government are the same people who are in the Republican Party now doing those same things. So it's kind of hard to sign on to what these folks are doing because their aims are not the same as mine. Their reason for being against this man is not the same as mine.
And we are so clear about
my enemy is not my friend.
But let me just say this to you. I am saying to you, I don't dispute anything you say. Okay? I can't dispute anything you say. However, I'm going to ask you the question. What were you expecting?
I expected no.
What was he expecting?
Here's what I did. I'm wrong. I did expect something.
What did you expect?
The same thing I expected for Bill Clinton was for these new Democrats, these DLPers, to come in and enact Republican policies. I never thought, as racist as I thought that people were in America, I never thought that the GOP would be so angry and racist against a man who presents the policies that they've championed for the past 25 years.
I have to ask you then, what world were you living in?
I'm born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. I've lived in New York for the past 56 years, and I never really believed that white people were as racist as they are. I've always known that folks were racist. I was a registered member of the Nation of Islam, so I'm not some liberal, everybody's the same, regardless of the color. I never had those beliefs, but I never thought that what I see from the Tea Partiers, the people out in the streets, the things that they say, this reading comments on the internet, I don't care what the subject is, whatever the article is that people are commenting on, I've never imagined the kind of racism that I've seen over the past 4 or 5 years. And I've never seen this before in America.
I agree with you.
I'm 56 years old, and I've never seen this.
I agree with you.
And I can't sign on to the people who want to do this. That's why I can't be a part. I'm not a part of any of it. I'm trying to be a part of any of this. But I can't be down with these folks.
Well, here's the issue. Here's my problem. I agree with you. I've never seen this kind of virulent racism either, except that, you know, we have, if you look historically, I mean, Barack Obama is receiving, a fairer shake than, say, Adam Clayton Powell.
Yes.
You know, there's precedence for everything. But hold on for a second. What I'm saying, though, is precisely because this president came to power the way he did, one would expect that he would retain, he would have unshakable allegiance to those constituencies that elected him. He did not do that. He was the one who put distance.
Huh? He never reached out to those constituencies. Those people latched on to him.
You're not understanding what I'm saying.
They connected. His policies are the same ones that he said he was going to do. He was going to escalate Afghanistan. He told you that before he got elected. He told you the things he was going to do. He told you that he was a right-wing Democrat. But folks didn't listen because they assumed, because he's an African-American and he's a Democrat, he will follow the principles of the past principles of the Democratic Party.
Right. He said that, and this is what is even more upsetting about Barack Obama. That the constituency was so desperate, so in need of help, that they overcame that. They gave him even greater credit benefit of the doubt than he deserved. They overcame even his own limitations. They went beyond his limitations and they said, okay, we see where you head, but we see our vote as a strategic move. And they made a strategic move. This is what upsets me. The vote by the people was a very sophisticated and strategic move. And he let them down.
Yeah, well, would you prefer him to be David Dinkins? Would you prefer him
to be David Dinkins.
No, he's not, because the difference between him and David Dinkins is that David Dinkins behaved as if he was a guest at City Hall. Is that he allowed people to do things to him that nobody else allowed. Barack Obama at least to fight back. Now, you don't like the way he's fighting. You don't like his strategies.
I don't like the way he's fighting. I don't like the way he's fighting against the people who put him there. How's that?
Yeah.
Sharon, we have to pick this up another day. But I love your points, and you know what I like more than anything else is your passion. But just so you know, that vote about that budget, even the Senate discarded it unanimously as it was in the House, and it never saw the light of day again. So this man and budget, he's not into budgets. Thanks a lot for calling, everyone. We'll meet again here tomorrow at 1 p.m. Tell those that you love that this is where you come for information and to exchange points of view. Coming up next, Economic Update with Richard Wolff. Bye-bye.